My name is Valerie Payne, and this is the podcast Binding Unity. I started this podcast because of a personal experience that helped me to see the need for unity in our society right now. I hope that you will come along with me on my quest to find unity as we seek understanding, connection, healing, and love. Hi, this is Valerie Payne, and you are listening to another episode of Finding Unity, and this is actually the last episode of the season, so I'm really grateful to have Brittany Thompson on. Brittany, do you want to say hi?
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Valerie.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for doing this. Brittany, do you first just want to give people a little bit of a background about yourself, maybe your upbringing, where you grew up, just a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I'd love to. I'm the second child of seven kids. There's five girls and two boys. And my parents, Matthew and Tanya, they're amazing. For anyone who knows them, they're just so wonderful. Being their daughter is just one of the greatest joys in my life. And my siblings, they're all built-in best friends. We've had so much fun together. They're shoulder to cry on. They give advice. They're there for you no matter what. And they're just so much fun. Come from California, Southern California, and we moved there when I was 8 years old, and I was there until my 30s. So I love California, love the beach, and I am married to my husband, Brennan Thompson. He's so amazing. He's my best friend and such a great husband and father. And we have four kids. Our oldest is Peyton, and he's 12. And then we have Abby, she's 5. And Ty, he's 3. And then our little Lucy, she's almost 4 months.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. She's so fun. And then we're here in Utah, and I'm a piano and voice teacher. I've been doing that since I was 19 years old, and I just turned 40. So do the math right there. And then I love it, and I get to do it from our home and be in the house with the kids still. And so that's so fun for me. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing. So you talked about, you know, how you're married, you've got four kids, and this is your second marriage.
Yes,
and so
it is.
We are going to be diving in to a little bit about just divorce and kind of what that was like for you, your experience, what you learned, but what maybe can help other people.
Yes.
And so thank you again for being willing to talk, especially with a kiddo who's 4 months, almost 4 months.
Yes, I know. If you guys hear in the background, I'll have my husband come grab her too. But I'm so honored to talk on this. It can be a very taboo subject, a sensitive subject. And there have been times in my life in the past where it's been hard to talk about. And so I'm grateful to be where I am in my life now, where I can talk about it and hopefully help people that are going through it, because we all need that. We all need help for someone maybe who's been there, or just maybe advice that we can get. And I was grateful for that in my life. So I'm hoping that this can be of help for somebody as well.
I'm sure it will. So thank you so much for doing this.
Yes.
So let's go ahead and dive in. You know, first of all, divorce, as you mentioned, can be really hard for a lot of people. Do you mind just sharing a little bit about your first marriage and just that process and that experience? Just tell a little bit about your story there.
Yes. Hopefully I'm not too long-winded here. I'll try to do the shorter version, but I was a college student at UNLV, and I think I was about 24 years old. So I was a little bit older going to do my undergrad at UNLV, and I'm such a homebody. I would go home all the time. Like, I just drive home. It was only 4 hours away, just make the drive. And in one of those weekends driving home, I went to the singles ward there in Southern California, and I met my ex, which was then my was going to be my husband, and I met him there, and he was a convert, and he was a golden convert is what missionaries would call him. He was like, okay, what's the next step? What do I need to do? When can I go to the temple? It was just amazing. And he was kind, and he was like really took to my family. And anyway, so we started to talk, and I was going back to school, and we started to date. And it was a quick courtship. I'm trying to think how long it was, but it was pretty quick. And we got engaged. And I remember he didn't really have a lot of family. And so the story that we got was, you know, my parents are both passed away, and my grandparents raised me, and they're passed away. And so my parents just took them under their wing, like, well, we're your family now. You don't have family, and you're joining the church, and we're here for you, and we're your family. You're our family. And so it was like, okay, we're going to do this. So we got married a couple months after we were engaged. I think the total was like 6 months. It was a short courtship. For looking back, it was a short courtship. Maybe people have done that or even shorter and it's worked out great. But for me, I think it was a quick one. And there weren't too many red flags during that courtship, maybe because it was so quick, but it came right after we got married. Mm-hmm. And I got pregnant right away with my son, Peyton. And after that, when I was pregnant, after that, that's when the behavior started to change, where it was, I mean, physically, his physical appearance changed. Emotionally, spiritually, he started disappearing. And here I was, kind of like a single mom. I mean, I didn't have Peyton yet, but I was married, newlyweds, and you think, oh, the honeymoon phase, here we go. And where was my husband? I had no idea where he was. Mm-hmm. And so, make a long story short, he was, before he joined the church, he was dived into drugs, so an addict. And we had no idea, which I didn't ask him about his past when we were dating. Looking back, I think those are important questions to ask. Doesn't mean that you need to make a decision and say, I'm running, I'm out of here. Because we all have things that we need to work on. We all have struggles and maybe addictions. But there's help and there's ways to get through them. In this case, I think it was just nothing was talked about. It was just like you take it for what it is and you believe what was said and then you go with it. And, you know, I was naive and looking back, maybe didn't notice some of the red flags, but there was one time right before we got married, like it was right before, where I couldn't get a hold of him for over 24 hours. And I remember mom going, that's not normal. And I'm like, well, maybe something happened. So I'm calling emergency rooms. I'm calling, like, thinking, oh my gosh, my fiance, he got in a car accident. He's dead. He's gone. And then he calls me. He's like, I'm so sorry. And there wasn't service. And people listening to this are probably like, oh, okay, that's a huge red flag. Looking back, yes. At the time, I was just so worried. And he told me he was at a business meeting. And I mean, I forget even all that he said. But it was, he comforted me in that moment of like, you have nothing to worry about. I'm okay. And we're getting married next weekend or in 2 weeks or something. So that was the only red flag that I remember. But it was a pretty big one. Like, how could I not get a hold of him? And so I had Peyton. I went to Lamaze classes by myself. My mom came with me sometimes, but I remember after having Peyton, I left a few times. Like I would just take him and go, I can't do this. You've got to get your stuff together. And finally I asked him, I said, okay, which is it? Because I never dove into drugs. And so I didn't know about him, but I remember Googling his symptoms and like three things came up. It was like, okay, it's either meth, which, oh my gosh, what a hard drug, or crack cocaine or heroin. And I'm going, what? So I remember asking him, and his physical appearance, that was the biggest thing. I mean, his physical appearance just drastically changed. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, which one of these are you on? And he said, none of them. And he was very angry and short-tempered and, you know, agitated all the time. And I remember thinking, I'm this mom, I'm this new wife and this mom, and I'm alone. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell any, I don't know what's going on. I can't even tell anybody what's going on. So when people ask, where's your husband? And I'd be like, oh, he's sick, or I don't know. I mean, I didn't want to make excuses for him, but I had no idea where he was. Mm-hmm. And finally, yeah. And it was scary. I mean, there were times where I didn't want to be in the house because just the feeling there, like he wasn't there. And I'm like, I don't want to be here. Just the feeling there was this dark feeling. And I just wanted to take my son and go. And luckily my parents were about 20 minutes away. And so I would take Peyton in the middle of the night. I'd get up if he'd come home, if he was, you could tell, agitated. He wanted to sleep. He was angry, or he didn't want Peyton crying. It was scary. And finally there came a breaking point for me And my parents got involved, and I was worried about that. I didn't want them to get involved, but it got to the point where they pulled them aside and they said, you have this family and you join the church, and we're willing to help with whatever you need. If you need to get into a facility, if you need help, we will help you, because there's no shame here. We can get help for you. We're going to help you. And he didn't want the help, and he was angry that they involved themselves, themselves, and he was angry at me. And the thing, the thing that kind of pushed me to just be done, because I go, we have a temple marriage here. There's an internal family. I'm not just going to walk away. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fight for this. He got violent with me, and it took one time. And I remember going to the lawyer, and I have my Peyton boy, and he's 2 or 3 at the time. Sorry, she's kind of loud. Sorry.
No, you're good.
She's 2 or 3 at the time, and he's 2 or 3 at the time. And I remember handing him my credit card and saying you had to pay a retainer fee. I think the retainer fee was $5,000 just for the lawyer to get started. And I said, fight for me and my son. Fight for me and my son. And I was so worried, because I think when you have somebody who is in the middle of this addiction, like with drugs, it's a very scary world when they're not sober. It's a very scary thing, because you never know which person you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And so I was constantly walking on eggshells. I was constantly like, I feel like I'm a pretty tough gal and I can stick up for myself and stand up for people. When it came to that moment, I was trying to keep the peace as much as I could, because I was worried if he would take Peyton and go, or not bring him back to me. And so I remember one time I was in the hallway of our house, and Peyton was crying for me, and my ex wouldn't give him to me. He wouldn't hand him over to me. And Peyton was probably about 1.5, and he wouldn't hand him over to me. And I remember my son had tears coming down his face, and I had tears coming down my face. And I said, it's okay. Mom's okay, and you're okay. And I thought, I'm not going to be this battered woman. I'm not going to be this mom to have my son be scared. I'm not going to live this way. And I didn't want to get a divorce, but I'm going, listen, I know that we're supposed to have joy in this world. I mean, there's a scripture that says, I mean, he wants us to have joy, that we can have joy in there. And I read that so many times, and I'm like, life is going to be hard, but if you're not having joy and you're in a situation where it's so much pain and you're being hurt or physically or emotionally, that in my heart, I was like, I cannot live this way. And my son cannot see this, because if he sees this, then he will think this is okay to live this way or to treat people this way. So I got a lawyer, and it took 2.5 years for the divorce to go through, because he wouldn't show up. He would show up, and then he'd fight and say, no, this isn't true. And then the judge would say, okay, if it's not true, that's fine, but we need to get medical records, and we need to see if this is not true, because there's a minor child involved. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the judge said that, we got so many things, which was saying that he was on drugs, and the drug that he was on was meth. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, if anybody knows about drugs and about meth, that is a hardcore drug, and it affects you, your brain. You're never the same. You won't ever probably be the same again. And so it messes with you, whether it brings on bipolar, whether it brings on mental illness. And I do believe at the time that maybe when he was joining the church of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I do believe maybe there was, he sensed like he wanted that light in his life, or he wanted goodness in his life, or to feel joy, or to feel needed and wanted. But I think when you're living these two lives, one is going to beat out. Mm-hmm. And so I think his intention in the beginning, I think it was genuine. I do. But I think he was too far in, and he didn't want the help. And I couldn't stay with a little boy to wait around to see if he is going to get that help. Who knows what would have happened. And so I remember thinking, oh my gosh, divorce. I'm going to have a scarlet letter on me for the rest of my life. And then it's a package duo. It's me and Peyton. And so who's going to want to date me? Who's going to want to, because we're a package duo here. And so I remember telling my siblings, my parents, going, I'm never getting married again. There's no way. And I thought I got married in the temple, and I thought, okay, you know, it's kind of like this eternal family image that I had in my mind. And I'm going, I thought I did it right in my mind, right? As in like, okay, you made it to the end. You made it. Here you are. Which looking back, I'm like, okay, that was so far from the truth, because that's not the end all for all. We have the rest of our life to learn and to grow. But you think like, ta-da, I've made it, or here I am, or I made this choice. And you're like, wait, hold on. There's such thing as agency here. You can't get involved in people's agency, but dang it, it can affect all of us. And I remember I was like, divorce. I'm 28 years old, 29 years old, and I'm divorced. I never really had a marriage. And so I thought, I'd never want to get married again. It's just going to be me and Peyton, and we're going to be okay. And I'm going to finish my master's. I'm going to be a teacher, and we're going to be okay. And my parents took us in, and we lived there, and it was therapeutic, and we needed it. And we went and found, you know, a good community to get involved in. And I just thought, I'm going to have this scarlet letter, but it's going to be us. It's going to be us, and we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. And so that's kind of where we were after the divorce. It was just, I was single mom and living with my parents and just doing the daily grind and not wanting to think about even dating, even though I was still so young. Like, I just was thinking, no, I'm not getting involved in this again. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of long-winded, wasn't it?
No, thank you so much for sharing everything that you shared. I think it was super helpful and very heartfelt, and I just feel for you, you know, like everything you went through. But I know a little bit more of the outcome just because of our relationship. Yes. But I guess just when you think about, you kind of talked about having this ideal and then divorce and the stigma behind divorce, and you mentioned your parents taking you in. How did you cope with, I guess, your interactions with people, especially like, you know, thinking back home in Southern California, I feel like our church community is a lot smaller than it is in Utah, per se.
Yeah.
And so how did you kind of cope with just maybe your interactions with others and finding peace while you were going through all that? Because it just seems so hard. I'm wondering what you did to get through it.
Well, I remember I was so embarrassed. Like, I was thinking maybe people were judging or looking at me, and looking back, and when I was in it, I'm going, oh, the majority of people are just worried about you. If there is somebody that maybe is judging, it's probably, I mean, there are things that they need to work on or that they're struggling with, but really people were worried. Like, they're like, are you okay? Or what's going on? And I remember my mom telling me, because I remember one night I was just, and it wasn't just one night, but it was this particular night, I was just crying. And I think I was on my hands and knees going, what did I do to deserve this? Like thinking that I was being punished, right? And my parents are like, you didn't do anything. But instead of keep, you know, continuing to look at what you did wrong or what you could, like, why didn't you notice the red flags? Because to backtrack for a second, Valerie, I remember I would not take away what happened because I got Peyton. Mm-hmm. I would do it all again because I got him. So I didn't want to say, why didn't I see the red flags? Why didn't I, you know, notice certain things? Why didn't I do that? It was supposed to happen. It was, because I wouldn't have gotten Peyton. And so I would do it all over again. Mm-hmm. And so my mom's like, listen, it's easy to sit here and be sorrowful and to sit here and think, why me? It's easy to do that, because why wouldn't you do that? Because this is so hard. And I remember my parents saying, if we could take away this pain, we would take it away from you. And she said, you got to serve. You got to get out and serve. And I'm thinking, I got to serve right now? I'm broken. I'm hurting. I can't, how am I going to help anybody else? And so my mom's like, start with what we would do as a family. So they would always, we'd go to the convalescent hospital, which I know you guys did too. And in our, you know, community, we'd go and we'd sing songs. And my mom is the kind of person where she'd go in a room and start singing and then start brushing their hair or painting their nails or rubbing their hands with lotion. Like, she would just be showing love the moment she walked in the room. And you'd go, okay, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And I grew up seeing that from my parents. They would go in there and do this. And I'm going, okay, do you know them? I mean, do you, but they would just love them from the moment they'd be in there. So I thought, I'm going to start with what I know. And that is, I love going to the convalescent hospital. So I started taking Peyton. He was 4 years old. And we started going every Sunday after church. So our church started at 9 a.m. And I think at that time, church was 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And so we'd do 3 hour church. I'd have a snack in the car for Peyton. And we'd drive directly to the convalescent hospital. And Peyton started violin when he was about 4 and a half. And for anyone who plays an instrument or plays violin, there's different strings. I don't play the violin. I'll play duets with him. But he was on the E string for like 9 months. So he's just on this one note playing this song, just playing this one note. And he would go to the convalescent hospital with me, and it makes me laugh. And we'd walk in a room, and we'd talk to some of our buddies. We'd make so many buddies. And he'd say, I'm going to play you a song. And he'd play a song for them on the E string and just play it. And they would clap or sing, like they would love it. And I'm thinking, they don't get a lot of visitors. And this is probably the highlight of their life or the day, you know. But I'm going, this is the highlight of my day, because it took me out of the sorrow that I was feeling. It took me out of the why me for just that 45 minutes to do this. And it took me going, these people need visitors, or their faces would light up if we walk in. And if I didn't have Peyton one Sunday because he was with my parents or he was sleeping, taking a nap, and it was just me, they'd go, where's Peyton? And I'd go in the common dining hall there, and I'd bring piano music, and I'd play and sing. And it was therapeutic for me. So even though it was something for them and it meant something to them, it got me out of my feeling, why me? Why is this going on? Yeah. Why am I a single mom? And so we continued to do that for a few years, every Sunday. We rarely missed a Sunday, Peyton and I. And there was one time we went, and Peyton, we had such a good buddy there. His name was John, and he loved airplanes, and he had a little bit of Parkinson's, so his hand would shake, and Peyton would always bring his airplanes and go, you know, make these airplane sounds. And one time we came there, and John wasn't there. And Peyton looked at me, he's like, where's John? And the nurse is like, oh, he just passed away last weekend. And I remember walking the halls, because Peyton would usually push him in the wheelchair. And I remember tears just came down my face. And I just thanked my Heavenly Father. I'm like, thank you for this, because they healed me. These people healed me. And I also got to take my son there where he wasn't worried to come in there. It kind of had a different smell in there. And you know, sometimes people weren't very talkative in there, or maybe they couldn't hear you, or they were just laying there. But my son was able to go in there and to play his violin, or just to say hi, just a wave. And maybe that was their only visitor that week, you know? And so, but in turn, it healed me. And so I wasn't just looking like I was this broken woman, this single mom, a divorcee now, of like, oh, I'm never, like, I'm being judged, or I have this scarlet letter now. Instead, it was, we're going to make it. We're going to be okay. And so it was so healing for me, which sounds silly, because it has nothing to do with divorce or marriage, going to play, you know, your instrument or to sing or to visit somebody, but it takes you out of focusing on your problems. Mm-hmm. And so when we hear people say, serve, get out and serve, oh my gosh, that's what I needed. That was the kind of the kick in the pants I needed to go, there's more to life than just what's going on in my life. Instead of kind of looking inward and thinking, my world is spinning out of control, I'm a divorced single mom, I'm 28, 29 years old, you know, thinking like I'm damaged goods, because I think there was a time where I felt that way when I was getting out and serving for 45 minutes to an hour on Sundays after church. It was therapeutic for me. It was what I needed to look outward. And some of these people, we'd come and Peyton and I would go and sing, and I'll never forget. I wish I recorded it on my phone at the time and just put it up. But it was a special moment. This one resident, and I forget her name, and she's no longer alive. But I remember coming in, and she had this wound on the side of her face. And I guess she tried to get up out of her bed in the middle of the night and fell. And older people, their skin, they bruise or scab easily. And I remember Peyton was so concerned. He pointed and said, Owie, She has an owie. I said, she does have an owie. I said, we should sing a song for her. And then I started to sing to her, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. And then Peyton started to sing with me. And then she started to sing. And I remember I sat there and I just started to bawl. I was just bawling my eyes out. And I'm going, okay, I know I'm sensitive and I know I'm very emotional, but I'm like, this is healing for me. This is healing to see that we're going to thrive, that my son, we're going to be okay. And those residents, they saved my life. I'm sorry to get so emotional. They saved my life. And I'd go and sing for them and they'd be in their wheelchairs, like clapping, and some of them not even being able to hear me sing very well at all, but they'd sit there and smile or clap for Peyton playing his violin. And it was more than just going to visit with them or play. Or Peyton always knew which room to go to get the candy. You know, there was this one woman, and it was so funny, this side note, this one woman there, her name was Tabitha, and she always had a drawer of candy. And Peyton just felt so at home opening up her drawer. And I said, oh, no, no, Peyton, don't go in there. She's like, no, no, he knows where the candy is. He can get the candy. And anyway, he knew where we were in the hall. He'd go in front of me and he'd push someone in their wheelchair, this little 3-year-old pushing a wheelchair, 4-year-old pushing a wheelchair. And it was the cutest thing. And I have pictures. I would take a picture of it, just seeing him push him. And I go, okay, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. It was that 45 minutes to an hour of once a week of like, it's going to be okay. And I had moments of those throughout, you know, the process of the divorce, and where instead of just looking inward, of whenever I got to that point of like, woe is me, or this is so hard. And you're going to go through that. Like if you're going through a divorce, you're going to have those feelings. You don't want to just push them aside and be like, no, no, I can't have these feelings. They're going to come. Just like it's a step in your grieving for sure. But just not to me. I'm like, my parents are like, don't stay there though. Don't stay there. Be there for a second, feel it. And then you got to keep going. You know, you're in this darkness, you acknowledge the darkness, but then you got to keep going. Yeah. And so coping, I mean, serving was a huge way of coping from this divorce that helped me. And even to this day, we'll go about once a month, we'll go to our local assisted living or convalescent hospital. It's nothing quite like what we did in California. It's a little bit different here, but it is, you walk in and you feel like this is home. This is so important. And so we'll bring Abby, and Ty comes and we'll sing I Am a Child of God for them, or Peyton will play his violin, or Abby will play her violin, and they'll sit and you go, okay, this is needed. Whether even as a mom now, I'll go sometimes with them. Maybe we're having a hard day. And so serving is a way to cope, I feel like, for so many things. If we can just get to that point, we just have to pick ourselves up and go, we can do it. Because thinking of serving when you're hurting is a hard thing. That is hard. But if we could try to remember that, even if it's just a little bit in our community, a way to serve, it will help us cope and be able to focus on something else. Yeah. Without focusing just on what's going on within ourselves.
I love that. I love so much of what you shared. And I feel like there were a lot of really great insights. So first of all, one thing I heard you say, you know, you mentioned like, what were the red flags and how there's this kind of like inward, like, what did I do wrong kind of a thing. But
yes.
Ultimately, it was meant to happen. And you're grateful for being able to have Peyton through that. And so I think that's really good advice to people who may be experiencing divorce. Like, don't dwell on the like, what could I have done? What could I have done? Because it sounds like there's still positive growth that comes, and blessings like your child that come from that.
Yes.
And then I also heard you say, you know, service, that was a huge thing. And something else I think is amazing is you said how those people healed you and you healed them. And I think it's amazing how whatever stage of life we're in, we all have purpose. Like those people in the convalescent home had purpose because they healed you. And they didn't, they may have never known that, but whatever phase of life we're in, whatever we're going through, we have purpose. So that was something I kind of heard as you were sharing how much service had helped you. And it sounds like music was really helpful as well, because without your music talents, it may have looked a little different, right? You still could have definitely served in the convalescent home, but it may have looked a little different.
For sure. I mean, and you know, you're so talented at music. I just love listening to you, and you just write these beautiful songs. But music is so, is and was so therapeutic. They always say, how come people how can they write this amazing art, or whether it's dancing or painting or singing or playing an instrument, and it just flows out of them. You know, they're continuing to write these pieces because love or loss or heartbreak, it, you know, even past musicians, they'll say, oh yeah, it just kept pouring out of me. It's like, how come when we're happy and just like, we're just having a great time, sometimes it's harder to write something, right? It's harder. And you're like, that's the truth. It's when we're hurting or we're broken. And then it just pours out of us. And that's the most, there's magic right there. Mm-hmm. There's magic right there. Because I've tried to sit at the piano before and write things where it's like, this is a great time in our life right now. And it's harder. Some things will come, but sometimes it's harder. But when you're hurting or broken or sitting in it, music is, it just flows out of you. And it's so therapeutic. Mm-hmm. I remember I'd sit at the piano and just sing, like belt it out. Like no one was there, giving my own little mini concert for myself. And I would just sometimes bawl while I'm doing it. And I'm like, I need this. This is kind of like my hoorah moment. Like, I need this. I need to shout from the rooftops while I'm singing. And just, this is therapeutic for me. Yeah. So music is just, oh, that universal language for all of us, for sure.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you had, you know, these great coping mechanisms and also a really great family support. I mean, it sounds like your parents were just amazing during that time. Do you want, you mentioned when you first experienced this, you were like, I'm never going to date again. Do you want to talk a little bit about, what dating after marriage looked like, especially what you had mentioned, you know, having that fear of having this, like the scarlet letter and having a child and what people may think of that. I'm just curious what your thoughts were as you moved towards dating, and also maybe stigmas you did experience as you were dating.
Oh, for sure. I remember telling one of my sisters, probably all of them, but I said, I'm never doing this again. And they're like, don't never say never. And I'm like, no, I can't ever do this again. But I remember when I was ready, the divorce took a while for it to go through with the courts in Los Angeles. It was this back and forth thing. So I was, even though we were separated, it was for two years? I'm trying to think of the timeline. The divorce wasn't final. So by the time the divorce was final, my mentality, like where my heart was, I was ready to move on. Like I was way ready. I mean, I was waiting for so long for the divorce to be final, and I didn't want to do it until the divorce is final. And so I remember people were like, well, the online thing, and this was maybe about 9-10 years ago. So it was a little bit more hush hush, I feel like, then. And 9-10 years ago doesn't seem like that young, but that long ago, but with the way online dating was going, I know it was just kind of starting up. Mm-hmm. Maybe a few years before that. So it was a little bit more like, you weren't like, yeah, we met online. You know, nowadays how we're talking about it, it was more like, oh, how, where'd you meet him? You're like, oh, yes. Oh, you know, you're like, do I want to share this? And so, but I remember my siblings like, just try an LDS, you know, dating thing. And my dad would be like, I know somebody. I'm like, Dad, hold on. Just wait one second. I'm not ready for that. You know, or if someone said something, I'm like, no, we're good. We're good. But then I just signed up on LDS. I'm trying to think what it was, but it was LDS dating thing. And I was on for a week, and I just felt so weird being on there. I felt like, cause you have a bio about yourself, you know? And so really you're trying to like sell yourself. Like, I am this great person and here I am. And you're like, I don't want to say any of this. I don't want to do any of this. Like, by the way, you know, stay a little longer on my profile. What else can I say for you to stay a little bit longer on my profile to read about me? But I started off going, I'm a single mom and he's my whole world, because Peyton, we're a package deal. And so I'm sure people, if they read it in that week, they're probably like, and I'm out. Maybe they did, you know, cause it was, listen, it's me and him. But I remember coming across a profile, which is my husband now. And I remember I came across his profile and I was reading it. He's very bright, and he was writing about things that he does and his background and his education and his family and his upbringing. And I'm going, he sounds so fun. And so I messaged him. I was just brave and I messaged him, and then he messaged me back, and then we messaged back and forth. And I said, listen, I'm getting off this website. I'm out of here. So here's my number, because I don't want to be on here. We had such good conversation that week that I was like, I want to just talk to him just as friends. And I remember my family's like, well, don't just put all your eggs in this basket, you know, like just, and I go, no, we're just talking as friends. And we talked for a few months and we, and then he'd call and I'd call, and it was a few months before we met, we'd FaceTime, but before we'd met, he came out to meet my family, to meet Peyton. He flew Peyton and I out. He was first base in Texas. He was a professor over there. And then he went, moved to Utah and got a job at Utah and in Utah, and then flew us out. And so we dated long distance. And at first it was just, we were friends. There was nothing, it wasn't trying to be, you know, date or anything like that. It, we were really just friends getting to know each other. And I fell in love with him. I fell in love with his family. And looking back, I think before it was, oh, I'm proposing to you, like with my ex, or we're getting married. And it was like this fairy tale, like, oh, I'm getting married. But in this case, I really got to know him, my husband. I got to know his family. I got to know his quirks. I got to know his strengths. And I fell in love with all of it. And before, I think it was like, okay, I'm, and I don't want to take away from that, because I was in love, and I was, and I thought I was doing the thing that I was supposed to be doing, but I, it was something different. It felt different. I knew him. He knew me. He knew my weaknesses. He knew my, you know, maybe things, quirks or things that might bug him or bug other people. And he knew it all. And he still loved me. And he was an instant husband and father on the moment we got married. And he was never married before. He's 4 years older than I am. So he was older also in the church, which maybe comes with taboo there too, you know, and he, that from day one was an instant husband and father. And it was like, he didn't blink with Peyton being his son. That was his son. His family took me and Peyton in, like we were theirs from day one. And just the love that I felt. And it was, and my family, vice versa, they loved him. They loved his family. They, it was a completely different thing, but going into the dating process, I was like, I don't want to do this. And so I took my time, because I was afraid when I'd walk, I'm like, people are going to see, I'm here. I am a single mom, and they're going to see this scarlet letter. And so I took my time. I really took my time. And we dated a year and a half long distance, and long distance is not easy mm-hmm. for anyone who's done that. That is hard. That is so hard. But we didn't want to jump into something, and we were older, but also I was a little bit more skeptical, but also I wore my heart on my sleeve still, but I was also looking for red flags, or I was looking for certain things, not judgments, but just things, because I think there are some red flags that you work through for sure. There are. And then there's some, depending on you and your circumstance, that maybe that's something that you cannot get involved in. Mm-hmm. I know for me, like I could not personally have gone through what I had with my ex and then to do it again. I knew the signs to look for, and I knew that. And there was no judgment against that person if they were involved in, you know, drugs before. I just know for me, for my heart, for my mental like awareness of things going on, I could not do that for me, just because it almost broke me. It almost broke me. And so there's certain red flags that, and we are all our own compass. We can decide and go, okay, this is something I can do. This is something we can work through. This is something I cannot work through, or I can't take my son through. You know, I was also thinking, this is not just about me. I have a son.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to use the word, I don't want to settle, because everyone has so much to bring to the table. They do. But I wasn't just thinking for myself. This is going to be a husband and a father to Peyton and to future siblings for Peyton. Like I can't just go on thinking, oh, I have the butterflies here. I wanted to get to know him and all sides of him before I needed to do that.
No, that makes sense. And I definitely think it's fair with what you're saying, right? Like, we're told not to judge others. But when it comes to dating and marriage, I think it's important to be able to make our own choices of what we are open to or not open to, just like with what you're saying, especially given your past experiences.
Yes.
You've given so much great advice about what you've, you know, done in the past, and then also, I mean, just to kind of help you cope, and then what dating looked like for you. On my podcast, as you know, I talk about unity and how unity comes through seeking understanding, healing, connection, and love. And I feel like you've shared a lot of examples of that already through your experience. But is there anything else that you wanted to add about how this experience or other experiences have helped you to find greater unity within yourself and in life?
First off, I just love what your podcast stands for. I love it so much. I love all the work that you've done with this because it's amazing. I think when I think, you know, when we think of unity and the definition that you gave and for your podcast, I think like connection and love and healing, understanding, and then looking inward, like forgiving yourself, like not holding yourself to the fire every time. To me, I'm like being unified with myself when this whole thing happened, not beating myself up for what happened. And when I say forgiving myself, not because I made the choice in marrying my ex, but just forgiving myself because I was hard on myself going, why didn't I see the signs? Why didn't I see the signs? Mm-hmm. But then coming full circle and going, but if I would have saw the signs, then I wouldn't have had Peyton. Like I said before, mm-hmm. forgiving myself in that I'm not damaged goods or that I can be of help to somebody else and I can empathize with somebody going through this. And that's where the connection and the understanding comes in, the love for somebody. So if I talk to a friend or met somebody, they're saying, oh, I'm going through a divorce right now. My heart would just break for them. I'd go, I'm so sorry. You're going to get through this. And when you get on the other side of this, you're already stronger for it. For whatever reason that happened with the divorce, you're going to get through this. And these things that we go through, man, sometimes we're like, why do I have to go through these things? Why? But it makes us stronger. It makes us more united. It makes us more unified. It makes us, hopefully, it makes us more refined. It makes us understanding to people's problems, to people's heartache, to people's needs. You know, maybe they're not good with reaching out saying, I need someone to talk to. Maybe they're not good with saying, I need help, or they're so worried, you know, that they have a divorce or they have this, they feel like they have this scarlet letter on them. I remember taking Peyton, and at the time where the building and the ward that my parents were in, you know, we live with them. So that those were our boundaries. But I remember saying, no, we're going to a whole other ward, to a whole other area. Because I was, at first I was worried on here I am, the single mom walking in, which sounds silly because 99.9% of the people are like, I'm so glad you're here and we just love you, you know, but it's more inside what we're thinking. Yeah. But we needed a fresh start. Peyton and I needed a fresh start, and people scooped us up and they took us in and talk about unity. I mean, there was so much understanding and connection and love, and they took us in, and I wasn't living on my own. I was living with my parents, with my son, but they took us in like, you are ours. And talk about unity. I mean, no judgment and just complete understanding. And I just hope that whoever I come in contact with, whatever they're going through, especially this topic, divorce, that's such a hard thing. And when there's kids involved, it's even harder. But I hope that I can bring unity to them of understanding and connection, because I have had that so much in my life. Dear, dear friends, your sweet family was like that in my life. Dear friends in California that were angels, that literally angels on this earth that were there for Peyton and I. And of course my family. And then, you know, the ending to the story, I mean, it's just kind of the beginning as well, but the ending to the story, my husband and I, we've been married for 7 years, together for 80 years. And he's always wanted to legally adopt Peyton. And we just didn't know if the timing was going to be right. We kind of wanted to get some years under our belt just to prove to the court, the family courts, that, hey, I mean, he's been his dad the whole time. And a piece of paper waiting for that to say, oh yeah, you're legally his dad, you're his father, to wait for that. That was hard for me because I'm like, he is his dad. The only other father figure Peyton has had in his life is Papa, is my dad, Grandpa, and then my husband. And so I was so worried when we went down this rabbit hole of with the courts and everything, we had to contact my ex. It was this whole thing, and it brought up a lot of, gosh, a lot of feelings and a lot of emotions that I thought.
Because he hadn't really been involved, right? Your ex. Yeah.
Right. No, he had not been involved at all since the ruling of the court happened in California. And when that happened, I had full 100% legal and physical custody. His rights weren't taken away in California yet, but I had full everything. And so, but he never was involved in Peyton's life ever, which in that case, looking back, I'm like, at the time, I think that would have been so hard for Peyton and confusing for Peyton. And so I find that to be a blessing in our life. I know that other people don't have that exact circumstance. It's different. And we all have different experiences that we go through if you've had a divorce and that there's children. But in our case, we contacted the courts here, and my husband and I, we were trying to get Peyton legally adopted by his dad, my husband, and which he's been his dad since the very moment. And I'll share this story. To make a long story short, we just found out 2.5 months ago, we just got the ruling that he is legally adopted by my husband, by his dad, Brennan, and it is the best blessing. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for where our life has ended up. It's been, if you look on a map, it's like gone up and down, around and this, and I would never know that we'd be where we are. And that doesn't mean that we don't have challenges and don't have hard things that come in our life, but gosh, we were being led and directed and held or carried, because sometimes we think in the moment going, how am I going to get from this point to that point? And Heavenly Father is aware of us all. He is. Sometimes on our own timeline, we wish we can kind of take the steering wheel, you know, let me take the wheel. And he knows what's best for us, even though it's so hard to let him take the wheel. Sometimes it's the most beautiful thing that I can look back into, witness in my life, in our life. Because there were some hard times. I remember not being able to get up off the floor and being on my hands and knees, just going, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can do this, or why me? But to continue on. And I'll never forget when the judge said, how do you feel, Peyton, after this? And he's like, I feel great. I've waited for this for a long time. And I remember I just sat there and I just bawled, because I'm going, I'm grateful that for his dad and for my husband, who've been there since Peyton was 4 years old, for our families, for taking us under their wing, for caring for us, for angels on this earth, where there was no judgment or there was just love and there was unity, for understanding from people. And I'm just so grateful. I mean, so much gratitude in my heart. And I hope that I can be, you know, a shoulder to cry on or lean on for those that are going through this, because it's a hard thing. It's so hard, but that you'll come out stronger and you will come out better, and that he is so aware of you, and to hang on. And I love the quote really quick. I'm seeing the movie Hope Floats.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I have so many quotes that I would just write down during things. But part of this quote, I remember I had on my mirror when I lived with my parents. When I had Peyton, we were just living with my parents, and then my sister Maddie was still living there. They're raising Maddie. And it says, beginnings are scary, endings are usually sad, but it is the middle that counts the most. You need to remember that when you find yourself at the beginning. Just give hope a chance to float up. And I would analyze that all the time. I'd be like, okay, well, this could have multiple meanings, but there's so much that can happen. And when you're going through it, hang on and remember how you feel at certain moments. Just because when I would walk in that convalescent hospital when I was broken, and I'd walk away maybe lifting my head just a little bit higher. Like, things can be scary, but when you're going through it, that's where the growth comes in. comes in and to hang on and to be open a little bit if someone wants to give help or give advice or just be a shoulder there or to show understanding or connection. Just be a little bit open for it, because your head, you might just sit up just a little bit taller from it that day, and I'm just grateful for that. So
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing and for sharing your story and for being willing to get vulnerable on here and share so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. You're so sweet, Valerie.
No, I do have one final question that I ask everyone, and you may feel like you've shared that already, so you don't need to add if you don't feel like you have anything else to add. But one final question that I ask everyone who's on is, what does unity mean to you?
That's such a good question. I feel like being one, we all have differences. We come from different backgrounds. Some people never get married. Some people get married and divorce. Maybe they get married and divorced a couple times. Maybe they have children. Maybe they don't. Coming from different cultures, different backgrounds, different, that we're all one. And that we have, a lot of us have the same goals, the same likes, the same interests. And maybe we don't, but that to seek for understanding. Maybe I remember, before I got a divorce, it was like, I would never get a divorce. I would never get a divorce, right? We say those things like before I had kids, I'd be like, well, I'd never give my child this type of food, or I'd never have them watch screens, right? And then you're in it and you're like, okay, well, I wish I could tell, you know, the past Brittany, like, don't say never, girlfriend, you know, you don't know, but I would never get a divorce. It's like, okay, but so when those things happen, or if those happen to people that you know, how can we be unified in that? How can you be there for them instead of like, oh, that person got divorced over there, or that person is going through this over here, or that person has their own demons, or is to be there for them to in the ways that you can, or that you're capable, to seek for understanding, especially with differences. Maybe there's some people that would think, oh, she should have never got a divorce. No one ever told me that, or I never felt that way. But if that ever came in my mind, you know, my own little thoughts, like maybe they're thinking, oh, why did she do that divorce? She shouldn't have got a divorce. But they don't know what I went through. And so if you seek for understanding, and vice versa, if I can seek for understanding for somebody going through something, that I can be there for them in the way that I can, the way that I'm, that's healthy for me to be there for them. And whether it's to find connection and to let them know that you love them. And so unity to me is even though we're all different, we're so similar. There's so many similarities, and that if we can look for those instead of looking for the differences, that's where we can come together as one.
I love that. Thank you so much, Brittany. Thanks for being on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Valerie. You're wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please like it on whatever platform you're listening to. Remember that it's okay to disagree. Unity comes when we can agree to disagree while still maintaining a love for one another. For more on unity, follow us on Instagram at finding.unity or on Twitter at finding_unity.